Hey, it's Riggs. Welcome to Riggs Off the Radio. Today, my guest, a coronavirus survivor, Billy Schulz, 27-year-old dude, drives trucks, listens to the radio show. We've known him for a while. I've had some beers with Billy before. And Billy was a big downplayer of the virus in the beginning, the way some people still are. Some people still aren't taking it seriously. Billy was delivering goods to hotspots, COVID hotspots, essential goods. He came back to Wisconsin, wasn't feeling well, goes to the ER, and within a matter of like 4 hours, the guy's on life support, essentially. He was given a 50% chance to live. He was put on a ventilator, and he said when you're put on a ventilator, you're given like a 20% chance to live. He was almost dead, 27 years old, but now he's recovered. He's got two beautiful kids, got a fiance. He's doing much better, and he's in a way better mental place, and I wanted to bring him on to tell his story because he's got a great story to tell, and I think somebody might be able to hear this somewhere that isn't taking this seriously that might be like, you know what? This can affect me. Yes, it affects a lot of older people, but it can also affect younger people, and it's because of that that Billy's been interviewed by a couple different news outlets, local TV stations. He wants to get his full story out there, says he can't get it on the news, so I said, you know what? I'll give you time on my podcast. Unedited. So I wanted to bring him on Riggs Off the Radio. Does that make sense? Bring him on Riggs Off the Radio. Bring him on the podcast and talk to him today for Riggs Off the Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, Billy Schulz. Dude, I'm glad you're here and I'm glad you're alive.
Thank you. Man, I'm glad to be here, and just as much as you're glad to be alive, as am I.
Now, walk us through your story. I know things kind of, you've had a complete mental shift through this whole coronavirus thing because it's something you've experienced and had and beaten firsthand. You're a truck driver. You're out of Jackson, Wisconsin, correct? Jackson?
Yep, Jackson, Wisconsin. That's where I live and reside.
So what do you mostly deliver, by the way, before we get too into it? What do you deliver with your trucks? Just kind of whatever people need. I know you've done milk for a while. Just kind of whatever the contract has for you.
The kind of freight I do, it's called open deck freight, like flatbed freight. So if you see like skid loaders on trailers, that's the kind of stuff that I haul. Skid loaders, forklift, heavy machinery. The company I'm leased on with, we do a lot of work with Oshkosh Corporation. So we go to a lot of military bases as well. But I get to haul a lot of, a lot of cool looking stuff.
Yeah. Now, before this, were you taking this seriously by kind of January, February, when it was kind of first coming out in the news? What was your mindset like kind of before all of this kicked in?
Honestly, no, I didn't take it seriously at all. I was one of those guys that was, posting memes about it and not, every single meme that was out there. But, I did my fair share of talking bad against it. Yeah. And I guess, I kind of chalked that up as karma. It's one of the reasons why I got the virus in the first place.
Well, you could say that if you want to, but I think you may have gotten it even if you weren't. So I wouldn't beat yourself up too much for it, but it's good that you're accountable in the sense that you were not taking it seriously and now it's affected you. And like a lot of things in life, when nothing matters to you in life, like to me, suicide was never, not to go too much of an extreme, but suicide, I never really thought about it. But then when you have someone in your life that dies by suicide, then you're like, oh my God, this is a real thing. Like this is something that can impact anybody. So having the accountability for you to do that is huge. So now I know you've done some notes and you've got a story that I want to hear, and I want people to hear. I think it's important for people to hear it. So please, I'll let you have the floor, Billy.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. So this whole thing started pretty much like Wednesday, April 8th was pretty much day one of me having symptoms. And it's not, it wasn't at that time or that day that I knew that I had coronavirus. I had pretty much all the symptoms of coronavirus that you've seen in the news or you may have done in some research, but it pretty much started out with some congestion, runny nose, stuffy nose, and a cough, and really didn't think anything of it. Then it kind of moved on to, headaches and, I had the sweats and the chills. I'd be cold 1 minute, I'd be hot the next. Then it turned into, a fever and vomiting, and I was starting to, to vomit a little bit of blood. And what really concerned me was the fever. Was you know.
How high was your fever? Where was your fever at?
The highest that it got to was 104.1.
Holy crap.
Yeah, it got, I mean, and even with, even on like over-the-counter medicine, it was on average about 101, about 101 on average.
Were you having the shortness of breath as well, having trouble breathing, walking around, things like that?
I really wasn't having that until Sunday night, and I was laying in bed, and I was actually sleeping, and my fiance was staring at me while I was sleeping, and she could tell that every once in a while I was kind of like gasping for air.
Yeah.
And that was when she knew that something was wrong. She didn't know what, you know, and I kind of told her of all my symptoms, and she had been aware because she was working from home. And, you know, that was Sunday night. So Monday, would put us to April 13th here. After, you know, about five, six days of having these symptoms, and I'm not getting better. I'm taking, you know, ibuprofen, over-the-counter, cold and flu medicine. Nothing is happening here.
You're still just thinking it's a flu or a cold or something at this point.
Right, right. I mean, which for me is pretty odd. You know, I usually can kick the cold in, you know, a couple days, and I didn't. So Monday, my fiance at about 3 o'clock said, kids are already packed up. We're going. We're going to the ER. You know, we're not messing with the doctor, not going to urgent care. We're taking you straight to the emergency room. And we dropped the kids off at my in-laws, and I did not argue. Typically, I would argue and be like, you know, whatever, that you're blowing this out of proportion. But I didn't. I'm like, you know, I knew something was wrong as well. And by 4 o'clock, I was admitted to the ER at St. Joe's, Frederick St. Joe's in West Bend. By 5 o'clock, I was in the intensive care unit. And they had shoved the stick, you know, in my nose to test me for COVID-19. And by 8 o'clock at night, I was sedated and I was on a ventilator. And one of the last things that I heard from one of the nurses, who we know as a family quite well, she said, Billy, you do not want to go on a ventilator because you only have about a 20% chance of living.
Well, because the ventilator is what's breathing for you, correct?
For the most part, yeah. I mean, I was still conscious. I was still, you know, kind of aware. I mean, I was pretty heavily sedated, but yeah, the ventilator is what's doing most of your breathing for you.
Yeah.
Correct. You know, and that was like one of the last things that I really remember. And, you know, in the meantime, I was given doses of hydroxychloroquine. I was given doses of azithromycin, or the Z-Pak, as they call it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, I actually had one of my dad's old respiratory doctors when my dad went through his battle with cancer, and his name is Dr. Olafson, and I was under his care, under his watch, and, you know, Tuesday rolled around, wasn't getting any better. Wednesday rolled around, wasn't getting any better, and he was starting to get frustrated. He was starting to get angry. He had tried everything in his power that he knows, and nothing that he did was getting me better. And, you know, it was as a doctor, you know, and I had a conversation with him after the fact, but he said he was getting very frustrated with himself and he was running out of options. And he knew about this new treatment. Well, not new, it's been around forever, but this new treatment for COVID patients, it's called ECMO, extracorporeal membrane oxygenation.
Okay. What exactly is that? Can you explain what that is?
Sure. Yeah. What it is, and I'm no medical expert, but I know the gist of it. It's pretty much for heart and lung patients, you know, those who suffer from heart failure or, you know, lung failure. It's a machine that pretty much does your breathing for you. It oxygenates, it puts oxygen back in your blood. So it takes your blood out and it helps put oxygen in it, and it puts the blood back in your body.
Yeah.
You know, and in my case, pretty much what it did, you know, and I'll get into it in just a second here. But Thursday came along and, you know, Dr. Olafson was, you know, he he had to pull a lot of strings. He filled out an application, called Frater down in Milwaukee, you know, told them all about my case, told them all about the treatment I had received as of, you know, so far. And for whatever reason, I wasn't eligible for this treatment. And he had to have a video conference with a team of doctors from Frater down in Milwaukee. And I don't know what changed. I'm not sure. I don't know what happened. I don't know what transpired in this video conference. But after, I mean, pretty much at this video conference, every doctor agreed to put me on the ECMO machine. And this video conference happened shortly before 7 o'clock on Thursday night. And I was down at Frater. I was Flight for Life ambulance down to Frater, Milwaukee. And I was there by 8 o'clock at night.
Oh my goodness.
And still, I don't remember this. I was heavily sedated. I was still on a ventilator. I don't recall any of this. This is just from what, you know, my fiance and my mother, and the doctors told me.
You had a helicopter ride and you don't remember it. That sucks.
No. It was Flight for Life ambulance.
Oh, okay.
It was the ambulance. Yeah.
I thought you were in a helicopter. Yeah. I was like, dude, that'd be awesome. You wouldn't remember a helicopter ride? That makes sense, though.
Yes. Believe me, I thought I was in a helicopter as well. But no, I may as well have been. You know, I was so out of it.
Yeah.
So anyways, and a little side note and a little shout out, Dr. Olafson, if you read this or if you hear this. I cannot thank you enough, because what you did saved, I feel like it was part of saving my life.
It was 100% saving your life. He go ahead. Yeah.
Because this ECMO treatment in COVID patients, it is a last ditch effort. It is this is the only thing we got. And if this doesn't work, then sorry about you.
It's your time.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not exact, you know, I got on a Frater and, they did the procedure to put the ECMO in, which it is a pin. They put like these two pins in your neck. And then that is what is drawing the blood out. And then there's these two tubes that is hooked up to like a headband that you have to wear around your head, and it's super uncomfortable, and it's, you know, impossible to get any sleep. But, it was, you know, I had that. And I was placed in the cardiovascular intensive care unit late Thursday night after I received the ECMO. And within 24 hours, I saw the doctors saw drastic signs of improvement.
That's good.
You know, between my lung function and everything else. And in the meantime, all my other organs were functioning well. I didn't lose any other organ function, which is, you know, obviously a very good thing.
So it was all your lungs. It was straight up lung, respiratory issues.
Yeah, it was. I mean, my lungs were so infected and so full of crap, you know, that it was the coronavirus attacked my lungs, and that was it, you know. So
have you had any health problems before? Like, have you smoked or anything like that? Have you had emphysema? Or, I mean, you're 27, so I don't think so. But have you had any underlying health conditions, diabetes, anything?
No, I'm perfectly healthy. A little overweight, you know, I don't know, you know, 10, 15, 20 pounds, but you know, who isn't?
That's any of us, right?
Yeah. And no, I mean, I don't smoke. I drink on occasion, you know, just to kind of unwind, and, you know, I probably like the most of us Americans, and yeah, I don't have any other, health issues, you know, but kind of on the other end of the sword. You know, people have said, well, you're young and strong and healthy. Okay, sure, fine. Yeah, that definitely helped my case. But with how sick that I got, I mean, I was sicker than most COVID-19 patients.
Yeah.
Or people that test positive for COVID-19. I definitely was a lot sicker than most of them. Not all of them, but most of them. So, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword there. But yeah, I mean, I started to come to kind of late Friday, early Saturday morning.
And this is how long you've been in the hospital, or in between the two at this point?
At this point, I was admitted Monday night, April 13th, and now we're just going into like late Friday night, the 17th, early Saturday morning, the 18th.
Okay.
So we're going on my first week here.
Okay.
And you know, at this point, I remember waking up, and you know, the nurse explained to me how, you know, I might have to have, you know, my throat like suctioned out, you know, because I had this I was still on the ventilator at this point.
Yeah.
And it was so hard to communicate with the nurses because I couldn't talk. I was on a ventilator. I had a breathing tube. And you know, what they did is they, you know, to suction it out, it was like they pulled a string on their end, and it helped, you know, it helped loosen up the stuff in my throat. And when they were all done with that, I had like a coughing attack. You know, it would make me cough for about 30 seconds. And then after that, they would have to put an actual suction, kind of like a suction that you get when you're at the dentist.
Yeah, one of those little those things, yeah.
Yeah. And then they would go in and suction out, you know, my mouth. I had to do that, you know, pretty much like every hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, just for comfort reasons, you know, just to be comfortable.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest struggles that I had was communicating that to the nurses, because some nurses knew exactly what to do. You know, they would come in, they'd gown up, they'd put all their PPE on. They would essentially, you know, what I call pull the string. I would cough. And then when I was done coughing, they would take the suction out. Well, not all the nurses knew that. And, you know, I mean, there would be times where I'm trying to explain through hand gestures because I couldn't write. And I tried texting, and that was just, I couldn't text either.
Right.
I don't know if it was still the anesthesia or I was just drugged up or what it was. So that was a big, you know, that was hard. And, you know, and getting my throat sucked out when they're pulling on the string, it was painful because I'm coughing so hard, you know, and I had a hard time breathing with all that. But you know, regardless, you know, I survived the day, Saturday, and they gave me, you know, sleeping medication to help me sleep. Well, it didn't help at all. You know, nothing they could do. It's just I was hooked up to so many machines, and I had wires and tubes, and I couldn't get comfortable no matter how they adjusted me. And it was just, you know, it's miserable. So now going into, let's see, that will put us Saturday, April 19th, or excuse me, Sunday.
It's Easter Sunday. Or yeah, that was a week after Easter. I'm sorry, the 19th.
After Easter. I had one of the nurses come in at about 5:30, 6 o'clock, and you know, they took my vitals, gave me my medicine, blah 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 blah, and they said, "Well, we've got good news. Your ventilator's coming out today," and my eyes perked up, like, "Oh, sweet!" And I remember giving both thumbs up, like, "That's great news."
Yeah.
And they told me it was coming out at 10 o'clock. Well, I'm like, "All right, well, it's, you know, 5:30, 6 o'clock now." And they have clocks in their rooms. Well, I literally, for the next four and a half hours, I stared at that clock.
Waiting.
And watched the minutes tick down. Well, at 10 o'clock, you know, it struck 10 o'clock, and I hit the call button. And one of the nurses came, and I did one of those, you know, I was pointing at my watch as if I had one on. Like, hey, it's 10 o'clock. You know, what they didn't tell me was it was at that point where I was getting my plasma transfusion, but I did not know that. Nobody told me that. I remember they came in with a bag at about 9:45, and they hooked it up, but I didn't know what it was. Nobody really told me.
Yeah.
And it's not like they're keeping it a secret, but they just didn't tell me.
Yeah.
And I obviously couldn't ask because I couldn't talk.
Yeah.
So at 10:30, I rang the little call button again, and I'm like, "What's going on? 10:30, you know, at 11 o'clock, I rang the call button, and I felt bad. You know, because I felt like I was being a disturbance or a nuisance, or I was being high maintenance, and that's definitely not who I am. But when you're told that you're getting a breathing tube taken out at 10 o'clock, you know.
At 10:01, like, you're banging on the door like, "Dude, let's get this thing out. I'm sure it's uncomfortable."
Exactly, yeah, exactly. You know, and it was every half hour. I was hitting the call button, and I later apologized to that nurse, and he's like, ah, not even a big deal. You know, don't worry about it. But it was at about Sunday at about 12 o'clock, and this time is kind of important for the reason that at this time, back in, not in Jackson, but just a little north, I guess a little northwest of here, is a little town called St. Lawrence. I used to live there for about 7 or 8 years with my parents, and my mom still lives there. Two of my friends in the trucking community put a trucking convoy together in my honor, you know, to help spread awareness and to help boost spirits of those in the community. And, you know, donations were taken, not really money donations, but just food donations. And this convoy started at 12 o'clock and at 12 o'clock noon. And my truck was the lead truck in it. My future father-in-law, he also has his CDL. He's a truck driver. He was the one that drove it. And I was unaware of this. I did not know. Nobody in the hospital told me. Didn't really have my phone on me. I mean, I had my phone, but I wasn't really checking it. I was so out of it. So at about short, you know, between noon and like 12:20, every minute or so, another nurse, another doctor, another technician was standing outside my door. So at about 12:20, there's about 20 people standing outside my room.
You're wondering what the hell's going on.
And I'm like, what is this? Like, come on.
Is this good news or bad news? I don't know.
Exactly. So I hit the call button, and my nurse, actually, he gowned up, and they, you know, fully gowned up with full PPE, and he came in, and he goes, Billy, the respiratory therapist is on her way up. They're going to take your breathing tube out. And I at first I didn't take him seriously because it's kind of like the boy who cried wolf. They told me 10 o'clock, here it is, it's like 12:20.
Yeah.
And, you know, whatever. So I put my hands up in the air, like what? And then time. And he goes, you'll have your breathing tube out within the next 10 minutes. And sure enough, I mean, literally the lady came up, gowned up. She goes, you ready? And I said, yeah. And it wasn't even like a, all right, 3, 2, 1, go. It was like, you ready? She already had her hand on the breathing tube.
It was out.
And I shook my head, yeah, gave a thumbs up, and she pulled that sucker out. And, you know, coughed, you know, and they put me on oxygen right away. And I remember she started to walk out of the room, and I kind of snapped my finger at her, and I motioned her to come back. And I asked her, excuse me, what are my odds of living right now? And she goes, oh my gosh, as close to 100% as you can get.
That's got to be a relief to hear that. From the beginning, when your friend was saying 20% chance of living and now you're fine, what's that?
I bawled my eyes out. I cried for probably 20 minutes straight. You know, because I didn't know. You know, last thing I knew is I was at 20%. And, you know, now I'm as close to 100% as I can get.
And was this the time when their convoy rolled by the hospital? Were you able to see that?
It was not. They didn't roll by the hospital itself. They rolled by my mom's house in St. Lawrence.
Okay.
They you know, whatever. And so the convoy lasted about an hour. So it got done a little after 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And I was able to call. I called my fiance at about 2 o'clock. And, you know, she was obviously over the moon to hear me.
Yeah.
That was the first time she had heard me or heard from me since Monday. And as soon as I got off the phone with her, I called my mom. And she goes, Billy, you're not going to believe what happened. You know, watch WISN 12 News tonight at, you know, whatever time. And, you know, I didn't even check Facebook until, you know, after that, but I saw that they did a news article and they did a, you know, about the whole trucking convoy, and, you know, a hashtag was kind of created, hashtag Trucker Billy Strong.
Yeah.
And to see all these people from the community come together and rally for me was one of the neatest things you know, that anyone's ever really done for me. And you know, I'm 100% and incredibly grateful for that. And I'd like to thank my friends, Juan Restrepo and Shane Voss for that, because those are the two guys that put the entire thing together. There's probably over 50 trucks that showed up for it. And it was an awesome event.
I have a couple questions for you.
Sure.
You knew this was happening right before you went to the hospital. You have a one child or two? You have two kids now?
Yeah, I have two kids. Yep.
So, my question now, has your fiance and your kids, have they been tested? Are they okay? Have they tested positive? Were they tested right away?
Nobody, they have not been tested. They were told they would only be tested if they show symptoms.
Okay.
My little girl is 18 months. My little man is, he'll be 8 years old in June. They have not shown any symptoms. They're fine. My fiance, Megan, she hasn't, you know, I mean, she's been by my side through this entire time.
Did they do any sort of tracing back to where you were before to try to talk to those? Because I know a lot of the COVID stuff now, when they're doing the testing, when someone tests positive, they do the tracing to find out where you were, to find out if by chance anybody that you encountered along the way might have tested positive. Did they do anything like that with you as well?
No, pretty much as soon as they heard I was an over-the-road trucker and I've been to a lot of the hot spots, they didn't even bother.
Right.
You know, New York City, Baltimore, Boston, you know, they didn't even bother. They right. just kind of put two and two together.
My other question is, like, as far as an insurance standpoint, is this going to be, I mean, I know you're obviously, your life has no, you can't put a value on that. It's your life, but is this going to be expensive? Do you know, do you have any idea what that's going to be with your insurance and everything? I'm curious. You're in the hospital for so long with the Flight for Life and everything, and the ventilator and the treatment you were talking about. Has that even come up? Are you not even worried about that right now? I'm just curious. And if you don't want to talk about it, that's fine. But it came up as a question. I was like, I wonder if he knows.
I haven't seen a bill yet, and I probably right. won't for a couple weeks, but, yeah, it's going to get pricey. I mean, not everything is going to be covered. Some things are going to be discounted, but it's going to get pricey pretty quick, you know, and it's unfortunate.
Yeah.
It is very unfortunate for that. But, you know, like you said, you can't put a price on life, and that's exactly how I feel.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I'll pay whatever it costs if I'm still here on this earth for, you know, for your family and your kids and everything. That's huge. How is
right.
So where is your mindset now? You've gone from, you know, kind of downplaying it and thinking it was silly and poking fun of it on Facebook. And now what do you say to people that are still have that attitude, that very laid back, the people that are pushing to go back to work and everybody's still thinking the hoax people? What can you say to those people to try to, you know, do you have any words to them?
As far as the people that say it's a hoax, I mean, I think they really need to do some more investigation and some more reading, because this thing is not a hoax. It's not at all. You know, and for those that aren't taking it seriously and they're not social distancing, and I really haven't seen many people having parties or whatever, but, you know, people that are still gathering in large groups of people, you know, you have to think of other people. It may not be yourself that you're worried about. What about your parents? What about your grandmas and grandpas, your aunts and uncles? You know, the people who are, you know, a little bit older in age and may have medical issues. You know, you got to think of others. It's not so much yourself. And that's what I really, you know, considered. And really, my outlook has changed. It's not so much myself or my kids or my fiance per se. But it's my other family members who are, you know, I don't have a whole lot of family. Still, the family that I do have, I have to be thinking about them. And I have to try to help protect them as much as I can. And I plan on staying home for, you know, a couple of weeks, even though I don't need to. I want to. And that is my own choice.
Yeah.
And if you have more questions, you know, just please feel free to ask as we go. But I'm just going to kind of keep going and telling my story here.
Please keep on going.
I remember I had my first drink of water at about 2:30 in the afternoon. You know, and at this point, you know, in almost a week, because this is still Sunday afternoon, and I was given, you know, an ice water and a Jell-O. And it wasn't one of those crappy hospital Jell-Os. They snuck one of the good Jell-Os, like the snack pack ones. And let me tell you, Riggs, it was the best drink of water, and it was the best Jell-O I've ever had in my entire life.
Dude, I bet. You know, after having plastic and everything shoved down your throat and not being able to really eat. Were you eating through a tube for a while? Were they just feeding you through a tube?
I was being tube fed, yes. I didn't have any actual meals. So yeah, it felt wonderful to, you know, to drink water and to eat a Jell-O, you know? Something so small and silly that we all take for granted.
Yeah.
But man, that Jell-O, it was a strawberry Jell-O. Oh man, I'll never forget it ever. It was great. And kind of, you know, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday night, I didn't really sleep very well. They gave me a fair amount of sleeping medication, even went as far as giving me some pain meds, and that didn't really help. But I was improving at an incredibly fast rate, like faster than anyone else in the CVICU that had COVID, faster than anybody had ever seen, faster than the doctors or any nurses had seen. And they were all like how? Like, I mean, they're not asking me, like, what am I doing? Because I'm just sitting around.
Yeah, they're astonished. You came in so severe with such a small chance of, when you had your doctor going on a video call begging to put you on a experimental treatment. That's how bad you were. That was a last-ditch effort. So, of course, they're in your, to be recovering so well, I could imagine their jaws are probably on the floor.
Yeah. I mean, by Tuesday morning, I'm like, can I go yet? Can I go home? And they were kind of not laughing, but like, no, you know, you're definitely getting better. You know, your oxygen is going up. Like my oxygen percentage of what my body is doing was going up as they were turning the ECMO machine down and down and down, lower and lower and lower.
That's what they want, right? That's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a great thing. And, you know, other than, you know, Monday and Tuesday, I made a lot of progress in a short amount of time. So, Wednesday morning came around and I ordered my breakfast, you know, got that. I got up, got in the chair, which was kind of like my daily routine at that point. I get out of bed about 8, 9 o'clock, get in my chair. I was able to have my guitar down there. I was playing, not a lot of guitar, but playing a little guitar just to kind of pass the time. And, you know, so then I was told at about 10 o'clock that my ECMO was coming out at about 1 o'clock. And I was astonished. Like, I was like, what? They're taking this out already? And they said, yeah, your levels are improving. The doctors have been seeing this and they're astonished and they want to take this out. I said, well, great. Let them. I'm not going to say no.
Right.
And it wasn't like Sunday where I was watching the clock tick down. You know, I was anxious because it was very uncomfortable and it was a process just to move me and had a lot of tubes, like I said, a lot of tubes and wires and stuff. But sure enough, the doctor came in a little after 1 o'clock, took out the ECMO machine, and, you know, that was a huge step. That was a big moment in my road to future recovery, you know, because I had heard stories of people not ever coming off the ECMO, or if it does, they're on it for months and months and months.
You were off it in a matter of days.
And I was on and off of it in less than 6 days.
Wow.
Which that in and of itself is a medical anomaly. Nobody's ever heard of that. Nobody's ever done that. As far as what I've been told and even my research, and I had asked the doctors and they said, we've never seen this before. You are incredible.
So there's like a little star next to your name as a COVID patient.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure, you know, I'm a Giants fan, you know, New York Giants fan. And, you know, we've beaten Tom Brady twice in the Super Bowl, but
by the way. Yeah.
Yeah, you're welcome. No problem. made a lot of money off those two games.
Yeah.
But, you know, just like kind of some of Tom Brady's Super Bowls, you know, people feel like they should be go under as an aspirin. You know,
I would agree with that. Yes.
Yeah. So, but anyways, you know, I was Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. I was doing physical therapy every day, pretty much getting me up and trying to walk me around, getting me walking. Not a whole lot, but as much as, you know, just a little bit. And in the, you know, in the meantime, I was still very unsure of what was going on. You know, I was being told I was making a lot of progress in a short amount of time, but I didn't know if I was like, I was wondering, like, am I ever going to see my kids again?
Yeah.
Am I ever going to get out of here? How long is it going to take to get out of here? I didn't know.
Are you still contagious? And can you spread it to other people? How long would you have to be, you know, isolated from your family? I would be worried about that too.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, but you know, somehow, some way, and I think it's because my kids and my family and my support system, I was able to remain positive. You know, I didn't really have many negative moments or negative thoughts other than, you know, when am I going to get out or am I ever going to get out?
Yeah.
But I was able to remain positive. And I guess that's just kind of who I am, you know, who I am as a person. I've changed a lot over these last couple of years. I've really tried to see the positive things of life. You know, no matter what, there's always the positive in something. It's very cliched. Hear it all the time, but it's very true. And
it's cliche for a reason. It's like, be kind to others. Like it's cliche for a reason. You know, it's smiling to somebody can go a long way. Finding the silver linings and things is what makes life exciting and worth living. Because if you're just gloom and doom all the time, what purpose is there to, you know, wake up the next day? There's always something to look forward to. There's always a new chance, a new opportunity, and a new day.
Well, sure, exactly. And you know, and one thing that really truly helped me with all of this, you know, not only having a great support system and getting a lot of messages and text messages and Snapchats and Facebook stuff, but a big part that I contribute my recovery to and staying positive was Aaron Lewis's music. I'm a huge Aaron Lewis fan, been to many concerts, I've done a meet and greet, I met the guy. Stained and Aaron Lewis music, I love it. It's very, a lot of it is deep and dark and very meaningful. And it's, you know, I think for that reason, people don't really like it, but it's for that reason that it's so relatable. It is a little dark. It, you know, he does tell his own life stories through music and through songwriting. And I was able to relate to, not all of it, but, you know, kind of what in some of his music I was able to relate to. And, you know, I spent a lot of days and a lot of mornings and a lot of nights listening to his music, bawling my eyes out. But I feel like it was good tears. They were therapeutic tears. I was listening to his music, and even though I was crying, I was getting hope. I never lost hope, ever. I always had that. And you know, I was actually able to reach out to Aaron Lewis personally and kind of gave him the shortened version, condensed version of my story. And he was able to write back.
Wow.
Which I thought was incredible. And
Twitter, Instagram? How'd you reach out to him?
I'm a part of a Facebook group. It's like a diehard fan of Stain and Aaron Lewis.
Okay.
And he has some family members in there. And I've been told that he reads and looks at some of the things that are posted.
Yeah.
So I wrote a novel, you know, a fairly long story, Friday night. I reached out to him, and Saturday morning, I woke up to his aunt reaching out to me saying, hey, you know, I'm Aaron's aunt. We've been following your story. We're talking about you a lot yesterday, which was Friday, and you know, I did show Aaron your message, and this is what he had to say. Very cool. Tell him I saw it and said, Billy, I'm grateful and honored to have been part of your recovery. God wasn't ready for you, my friend. Get better, and I'll see you at the next meet and greet.
My God, that gave me goosebumps hearing that from Aaron Lewis saying that to you. That's awesome.
Yeah, and that, you know, made my day. That made my, you know, I mean, at this point, it's Saturday. Well, let's check the date here. Saturday the 25th.
Yep.
And, you know, at this point, I was moved out of the CVICU on Friday, the cardiovascular intensive care unit. I was moved out of there on Friday into a regular room. And I was told that the only thing holding me back from getting discharged is I had to do a 6-minute walk test.
A 6-minute walk test?
Walk, like you walk down the street, a walk test.
Yeah.
And what they're looking for is they want your oxygen to remain above 87% during this entire test. And as long as you can do that, then, you know, you're pretty much symptom free. You're allowed to go home. So as soon as I got moved out of the CVICU on Friday, it was about 11:30 in the morning, noon. I got moved up to a regular room. I was on the nurses, like, hey, can we get this test done today? You know, like, come on, let's go. Well, you know, they weren't able to get it in on Friday, which I was a little bummed about, but I'm like, okay, you know, whatever. You know, I had to be off oxygen for 24 hours as well. That was another requirement. And I was off oxygen at about 4 o'clock Friday morning.
And that's, I'm sure that's not just for you. I'm sure that's for other people too, to make sure you're not going to go back out into the world and spread it out there.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. And it was exactly. So Friday night, you know, I didn't sleep very well. I was very anxious. I wanted to go home.
Yeah.
Cause at this point I was in the hospital for 12 days.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, all right. I'm like, all right, one more day. Just got to grind it out. Well, my night nurse came in and I begged and pleaded her to make a note or call the respiratory person to please see me first thing in the morning. I wanted to be one of the first people that was seen. Well, that's not really how things go in a hospital. Patient No. can't just do that.
No.
I was up at like 3:30 in the morning on Saturday. I was wide awake. I was ready to rock and roll. And my night nurse came in, you know, checked on me, and I told her, and she said, they do shift change at 6 o'clock in the morning. I will have a message for the new respiratory person no later than 6:30. I leave at 7. And I'm like, okay. I said, please. I said, this means the world to me. You know, I was begging and pleading. I mean, I was literally begging.
Yeah.
Because I just wanted to go home and be with my family. And I was able to kind of fall asleep a little bit. And at a little after 8 o'clock in the morning, I had a knock on my door and someone came in. And she goes, hi, I don't know, I think her name was Kayla or Katie or something, with respiratory. I'm like, oh, hi. And she goes, do you need help? Do you need care? I was told to come to you right away. I said, yeah, I gotta bust out this walk test so I can get out of here. And she's like, okay. And she started doing some computer work and, you know, turns around and goes, all right, well, why don't you get up out of your chair and, you know, kind of walk around your bed a couple times just to get your heart rate up. I'm like, okay, all right, sounds good. Well, I literally walked around my bed for about a minute. And she goes, okay, yeah, you're good. I'm like, what do you mean I'm good? She's like, you passed. You're good. Your oxygen looks good. Heart rate looks good. Everything looks good. And I'm like, I get to go home? And she goes, well, I'm not 100% sure, but I think this is what is, you know, stopping you from going home. So I'll let the doctor know. And that was another one of those moments where it was just, I mean, it was not a 6-minute walk test. It was only like a 1-minute walk around my bed thing.
Right.
And I don't know if they kind of let me go because I did recover so fast in a short amount of time. I'm not sure. But I mean, within the next hour and a half, I saw one of the general medicine doctors. He came in and he goes, all right, I'll start on your discharge papers. And, I was discharged Saturday afternoon about 12:45.
So a total of, 13 days in the hospital, almost 14 days.
Yeah. Saturday was my 13th day in the hospital.
And now you're back. They allowed you to go right back to your family. No problem. You didn't have to isolate from your family or anything like that. Were there any warnings like that of infecting them? I know you said earlier, no. they were not symptomatic.
Yeah. The reason being was because when I got released on Saturday, prior to that, the general medicine doctor said that because I've already had symptoms for over 2 weeks, that he doesn't feel at that point I was contagious anymore, based on his medical expertise or medical opinion.
Okay. Well, at that point, so, you're the doctor. You know, he went to school for 8 years and you didn't, so I'd take his word over anybody's.
Yeah, exactly. And, at that point, I took a shower. I took the first shower in almost 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It was incredible. I had clean clothes waiting for me, and it was wonderful. And I had to wait a couple hours. And like I said, on my way down, I was wheeled out in a wheelchair. I was just playing my guitar. I was playing any song I could think of that I knew. And, because I had seen videos of people getting wheeled out, and there's like a parade of nurses and doctors waiting for them. And I was kind of expecting that. And not like it's a bad thing that it didn't, and there really wasn't anybody. Nobody was really waiting for me or lining the halls.
They did a whole truck convoy for you, Billy. Jesus.
I know. I'm being greedy. I'm getting greedy.
I know. You're being ridiculous. I understand you're being silly.
But, I figured I'd give them a little, as much as they're giving me a send off, I'll kind of give a send off to them.
Yeah.
How many people get wheeled out in a wheelchair playing guitar?
After just kicking the crap out of coronavirus, the thing that's sweeping the entire globe, that's knocking out people left and right. You, a 27-year-old trucker from Jackson, Wisconsin, took it and went from the most severe symptoms ever, and you recovered faster than they've ever seen before. You were like a novel case for them, I'm sure.
Oh, sure. And my case is going to be used for research around the globe.
I bet.
From now on. And knowing that, it's not like, oh yeah, look at me, and I'm this big hotshot. No, that's definitely not what I'm looking for. That's not what I'm going for. I'm proud of that. I'm glad.
Well,
I want to get the story out.
You will now save someone's life with your story. They will apply that to someone else. Someone else's life will be saved somewhere else. You won't know them. They won't know you, but someone else's life will be saved because of your case.
Absolutely. And I am so thankful for that. I don't know how to word this. I guess I don't want to call it politically correctly, but I don't really know how to word this, but I'm glad that the first week, I don't really remember much of it. I feel sorry for the people that had to go through it, such as my family and friends. But this entire thing, this entire journey, that 2 weeks was just such a roller coaster, but I'm proud to have gotten through it, been through it, beat it, and now, I feel like it's my job, or it's my duty, to spread awareness and spread hope to other people and share my story and get it out as many different avenues and platforms as I can, so people can hear this, and even if they don't take much from it, I want to let people know that this coronavirus, COVID-19, whatever you want to call it, it can be beat. It absolutely, most definitely can be beat. It is not a death sentence. Yes, I was young, or I am young.
You had youth on your side. You did.
Yes. However, I did, like I said earlier, I got it worse than most. So I think that, something in and of itself as well.
So the message of hope, the message this can be beat, and this whole thing will pass soon. It's not going to last forever. To the people that are sick of being stuck inside, the people that are like, I'm not sick, I don't have any symptoms, this is bull crap, I don't want to be stuck in my house, what do we tell those people? Because there's a lot of people that are still feeling like that, that feel like, this is just the worst, I'm stuck in here for 6 weeks.
Yeah, I feel for them. I've been on quarantine or isolation, whatever you want to call it, since I got home, and I'm driving myself nuts. I'm starting to run out of things to do and stuff like that. But honestly, my own personal opinion. This has nothing to do with politics. This has nothing to do with anything. This is just my own personal opinion. I think people just need to grind it out just a little bit longer, a couple more weeks. I understand you want to get back to work. I understand you may be hurting financially. I understand that. I cannot, I feel for you. I feel that if you can just grind it out a couple more weeks and try to let this pass just a little bit more, I really think we'll be better off in the long run.
Flatten the curve, man. Flatten it.
Absolutely. I mean, that's really my own personal feeling, like I mentioned, like 10 times now. But I really think if we can all just, if you've been working okay, great. And if you've been staying at home, I think just stay home a couple more weeks.
At this point, what's another couple weeks going to do for anybody? Is it's going to do far more good than bad.
Exactly. If the state opens up, hypothetically, Friday, you're going to have a lot of big gatherings. You're going to have a lot of people in a lot of places and a lot of small places.
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of dive bars in places, and I'm sure that's where people are going to go.
Yeah.
They're going to want to go to the bar.
Yeah, it's Wisconsin.
And having a lot of people in a small amount of area, in a small area, is not the greatest thing. So I guess another message I want to get out to people, please, please try to be somehow, dig deeper than you ever have. Just try to grind it out a couple more weeks, please.
Look how deep you dug. Deep you dug. 13 days in a hospital and you kicked Corona's ass, Billy. I'm glad you got to tell your story today. Hopefully I did it justice. I'm not going to edit any of this. I'm just going to put it up 100% as it was. So is there anything else you want to add?
Yeah, there is one more thing I want to add. First off, hats off to Dr. Olofsson at Frater St. Joe's. He's a respiratory pulmonologist. Without his knowledge, his expertise, that video conference, I don't know what my state, I don't think we'd be having this conversation right now. I don't know if I'd be dead. I don't know if I'd still be on a ventilator. So number one, thank you. Number two, thank you to the entire nursing staff and the cardiovascular intensive care unit at Frater and Wauwatosa. Rebecca, Callie, Travis, Melissa, Mallory, you were all great. You all took great care of me. Joel, Marta, you were all great. You were all fantastic people. Dr. Durham, he was my ECMO doctor. He is the person that put the ECMO in and to take it out. I lost my CVICU doctor's name. Dr. Ficaro, he was my CVICU doctor. Thank you very much. The entire staff down there, whether it was the nurses, the doctors, the people who brought me my food, you guys are really the true heroes.
You had a whole team of Avengers helping you out there.
I really did. I really truthfully did. And kind of getting, you mentioned Avengers. I guess now thank you to my army of people. My fiance, Megan, love you to death. My mother, Kathy, my sister, Kalina, my aunt and uncle, Todd and Julie, my in-laws, my future in-laws, Chris and Darren, thank you so incredibly much for everything that you've done. Megan's aunt and uncles and cousins, and all my prayer warriors, as I call them. Anybody that reached out, said a prayer for me, thought about me, sent me great vibes. I'm getting a little choked up here.
All right, man. This is life-changing stuff. You take your time.
I want to thank all you guys for sticking by me, for being by my side through all this, through helping me through this. You guys are also the heroes as well. I did a lot myself, but without all the prayers and the great vibes that I was given and thoughts, I wouldn't have gotten through what I did. And lastly, if this message does get out to him, Aaron Lewis, thank you so incredibly much for producing the music that you've done, or produced music that you have. Thank you so incredibly much for being the person that you are, being the American patriot that you are. I feel like if I was, you know, able to talk to you more, you and I would be best friends, you know, and I'm sure a lot of people have said that about artists before, but I mean, your music and your talent has really helped me get through this entire battle. And thank you so much for the music that you've produced. And like I said, the person that you are. And last but not least, Riggs, thank you so incredibly much for having me.
Of course.
Thank you for letting me have the time and taking the time to let me share this entire story. And I look forward to, you know, to sharing this and getting it out as far and as wide as I can. But like I said, Riggs, thanks once again for having me.
Of course.
This is a great opportunity for me. And your time, taking the time out to do this for me, it means so much. And you better believe once all the bars open up and things are a little bit safer, first round's on me, buddy.
Hell yeah, man. I'm going to hold you to it.
Absolutely, as you should. I'm a man of my word.
You are, Billy. Billy Schulz from Jackson, Wisconsin, COVID-19 champion, COVID-19 fighter. You made it through it, and I'm glad you're here to tell your story. Thank you so much for coming on my Riggs Off the Radio podcast, which, by the way, you were officially the longest episode I've ever done, and it was worth every second. Every second.
Well, there's a lot to tell, and I know I chit-chat a lot, but yeah, I could imagine.
But thanks again, Billy. I really appreciate your time, too. Stay safe.
Yeah, thanks, man.